Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
I feel like people haven't seen me at my best because we have a loaded roster, so sometimes you got to do what needs to be done as a team.
Hour number three of Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Jones out rest of the week. Billy Laney has slid over. Justin Turpin now in the house for some pure hoops. Turp, how are you?
What's up, boys? How are you?
That was, of course, the voice of one Jaylen Brown. He was at the Garden last night for the Caitlin Clark game.
So was George Niang. You see that?
Yes.
The beef is behind them.
Thank God. So we can all rest easy. Those guys don't hate each other. So we can embrace George Niang. Will George Niang even be on the team when the season starts?
I think he will be.
Okay.
I think he will be. At this point, it seems like this is the roster that they're going to enter the season with. I think Brad Stevens made that rather clear the other day. They're still less than a half a million dollars over the second apron, and that's a move they can get under by just waiving J.D. Davison. It's that simple for them. So I think this is kind of what they're going to enter the season with. I think they were actively shopping Niang and Simons and possibly even Hauser, but I'm not sure that was the case the way Brad Stevens talks about Hauser, but feels like this is what they're going to enter the season with, and they're comfortable as they will be. I think Brad Stevens pretty much admitted the front court is going to be terrible, and they're just going to have to figure it out.
Yeah, we're kind of punting on the front court. They have a good backcourt.
Yeah, the backcourt's great. The front court, not so much. When you're going in with Luka Garza, who has been like a per 36, I don't know if you're a per 36 analytical measure here, but
hey,
he's been a darling in that department.
Minutes, Xavier points, Tillman, assists, rebounds.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Give me the big five.
Right.
Xavier Tillman, he's going to play a little bit of the five, but he's more of a four. He's a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
Obviously, his knees have been an issue as well. And then you'll have Namish Keita, who has had big games for the Celtics. Like, he's won them games, specifically 2 years ago.
He had a stretch there where I was trying to convince Jones that he was good.
We were riding the train.
Yeah, we were.
We were all over it.
He kind of got a little quiet.
They're going to enter with those guys and see what happens. I think Charles Bassey now on the summer league roster does present in decent kind of option here as well, because you can't enter the year with just three bigs and two and a half, really, because Tillman's not necessarily a five, so you're going to need to add someone there.
How small can you go?
This is going
to be like
small.
The there was an old Villanova lineup, not the Jalen Brunson team, but the prior to that, it was Kyle Lowry and like Mike Nardi, Randy Foy, Allen. They went four guards. Like, they always went four guards. I feel like that might be the Celtics.
They're going to play small this year, and they're going to play fast. And it's going to be interesting because offensively, they could, especially if they keep Simons, they could put up 125 points a game, but the other team could put up 145.
Right.
Like, you're looking at a bottom five, at the very least, defense this year.
Ugh.
You don't have any front, you don't have any rim protection.
No.
You don't have any bigs to slow those guys down. And if you look around the league, just how important the center position is, like, Celtics are in a bad situation in that department.
Ugh. Are they still a low seed playoff team?
I would say so. I mean, it's a team with Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser. Like, there's still talent on this team. Now, what I would wonder is if Jaylen Brown rolls his ankle, an injury that last year or the year before, any year in his career, would have cost him three games, is now 2 months, just kind of shutting him down. Because you don't want to overextend these guys. I think that's probably the number one thing. The worst thing you can possibly do is overextend a guy like Jaylen or Derek and have them get hurt, and then you're not fully healthy entering the 2026-27 season, which is what this seems like it's all about.
So as like the casual fan, like that's what I'm asking, in the sense of like, will this team be worth watching throughout the year, or as opposed to like, all right, I'll check in the beginning of the summer for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun team to watch. I
mean,
we've seen teams like this before, like the Isaiah Thomas Celtics. Like,
right,
this team could kind of be like that, where there's not a lot of expectations.
A chippy team full of hot.
Right, and sometimes that makes it more fun.
Lot of expectations on Jaylen Brown, and he's kind of put it on himself. So we just played that cut coming back. He was on with Kyrie Irving, which is another sort of aside, which I know he's friends with Kyrie, but as a Celtics fan, it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And it's like, those two specifically butt heads when they were here. When Kyrie was here, I mean, those two guys didn't get along. Then Kyrie leaves. Everybody here in Boston can't stand the guy. And now all of a sudden, like, he and Jaylen Brown are like best buds. And Brown got into some issues with some of his like support of Kyrie, where it wasn't just about like Kyrie the person or the player. It was some of the posts that Kyrie had and some of like who he was associating with. And Jaylen Brown got kind of caught into that mess. So like, Jaylen Brown to me is a... he makes it hard to root for him with some of that stuff and like hanging out with Kyrie Irving. And you're like, whatever, like you can hang out with whoever you want to, but I also can feel any way I want to. On the court, like he plays hard. He's an easy player to kind of root for your team. But some of the other stuff is just kind of like an eye roll.
Right. It helps too because he wants to be the man.
He does. You know, like, so great. Watching like, let's see what this looks like this
watching
year.
That is the best part. Knowing that that guy wants to be higher than he already is. I mean, you were finals MVP. You're making a ton of money.
Yeah.
And yet he still thinks there's more to do. And that's what's exciting to
and
watch.
And I think that's part of the thing that's bothering him. Is
Dude, there's a lot bothering him. We'll get to this article coming up. Yeah.
Finally, he is the guy. Like, he's always, there's always been 1A, 1B. It's always been him versus Tatum. It's always been that way. Finally, he is the guy. And here we are talking about, like, oh, they could be a low playoff seed. Like, all of a sudden, there's no expectations. And the team, granted, it's because of the situation they were in, and I'm sure he understands this. The team didn't really do a whole lot to surround talent around him, right? The finally, Jaylen's the guy. He's got a chance to prove what he is. And he's a very prideful individual. So, like, he's going to take this opportunity and be excited to roll with it. But the team selling off pieces, you're bringing in low-end free agents that have potential upside that could complement you in the future. And it seems like every time you say a retool, like what exactly is a retool? It's a mini rebuild, is it not?
Yeah, of course.
Like there's no
especially
such
with
thing
such a
really...
small roster.
Right.
It's not like other sports where there's a million players.
You lose one starter due to injury and then you trade two starters. Like you're down three starters from last year. Like you're not going to be the same.
I mean, just think about the guys they lost this offseason. Kristaps Porzingis, Drew Holiday, Luke Kornet, and eventually Al Horford. That's a playoff roster.
Right.
Just the guys they lost in general. So it's tough to make up that ground, especially when you're kind of handicapped in what you can do because of the financial situations and the basketball penalties. And I think for the most part, fans understand that the moves they were making wasn't because of financials.
Stevens straight up said it.
Part of it, yes. I mean, part of it is like, I mean, you can't really justify spending $500 million on a roster that doesn't have your best player.
Right.
And not to mention, they were going to lose in the second round anyway.
They were done.
Like, oh, well, Tatum got hurt. You never know what happened. Like, they were moments away from being down 3-1. They were going to lose that series no matter what, which makes it even harder. So that's just life in the NBA now. Like, it's going to happen. Like, the money's going to play a factor. All the basketball penalties, all that's going to factor in. And, you know, it's just a kind of firsthand, the Celtics are the first team to experience it. And that's kind of tough to swallow.
So Jaylen Brown's been doing a lot of different things in the community, really his entire time here in Boston, and this summer, that's no exception. He also did an interview with Noah Dalzell. Is that how you say it?
Noah Dalzell, yeah.
Dalzell, yeah. So Celtics blog, it's a great breakdown, a lot of really, really good quotes in here from Jaylen Brown, including, you know, how he feels about the city, but also how he feels about the team. And he was asked about, like, on-court sacrifices that he's made. This quote jumped out to me. I want to get your take on this, Terp and Billy. Quote, I disagree with a lot of things. I've had to change roles, styles. I've had to do things that other players of my talent just haven't had to do, and I've been okay with them because I've always been a team guy. I feel like sometimes that gets taken for granted. Okay. What do you think of that part? There's more, but like that's sort of what he disagrees with a lot of things. That changes roles, and other players as good as he is wouldn't have been asked to do that.
Honestly, I think he just said the quiet part out loud. I mean, every NBA player does say that, and people on the team the last 2 years too, like Derek White at times has mentioned to Kristaps Porzingis, they all want to take more shots, right? Every basketball player wants to shoot the ball and score more points, and I think Jaylen is no different, and he wants to do that as well. I think also with him, like when they did kind of change, when they brought in the new iteration of the Celtics and Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday, if you remember thinking back to the 2023-24 season, it took him a little bit of time to adjust. Like he was one of the ones that was really the most affected by it because he went from being like a clear number two to like some nights it was Derek White, other nights it was Kristaps Porzingis, and Jaylen was still terrific in that season. I think his best season was actually the 2023-24 season. Like that was his best regular season and postseason.
Yeah, that was when he got all NBA, right?
He was phenomenal that entire year. So I think he said the quiet part out loud because I think a lot of players
also
feel this way.
So I understand, like, he is viewed as the second best player on the team. So despite being Finals MVP and an NBA champion, like, he's just viewed by everybody, with the exception of probably him, as the second best player. He did take almost 18 shots a game, which is easily in the top 20 in the NBA. So there's 30 NBA teams. You take the 17th most shots. Tatum's above you on that list. But I'm just curious, like, what is he talking about, like, sacrifices? Like, they won a title 2 years ago. So whatever they asked you to do, like, I guess they asked, you know, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett to sacrifice in 08. They did. They won a title. Like, is he looking at this as it comes across? And the problem is this is just in print.
Right.
So, like, you can't really, like, read into, like, how he's saying it.
Tone,
you can't
yeah,
do
that's
that.
Important.
So is he like, hey, I bought into this and, like, it's worked for my career and for the team? Or is he like, hey, like, give me credit for sacrificing all of this. Not a lot of people would do that. Like, is he mad about being asked about to
there
do
was
this?
Another quote in there towards the end that he was saying how it was all worth it because they ended up bringing back Banner 18, okay. And obviously he played a key role in that. I wonder if it's just the style of play as well. Like, Jason and Jalen kind of combat each other in the way they play. Like, Jason's a really, he likes to slow it down. It's a lot more like, we're going to work, he's going to just use his skill, where Jalen's one of the best players in the league in transition. And there's kind of, and we talked about it when Tatum went down. It's like, how different are the Celtics going to play? Like, we're going to see it firsthand this year. They're going to play a lot more, they'll play a lot quicker this year with Jalen at the helm. Like, that's just how he wants to play. So maybe it's because of the style of play. Maybe mm-hmm. it's just the limelight of, like, hey, I've always been in Jason's shadow. Like, that's just been the reality for him since he came in the league.
So how much change do you think there was from Ime to Mazzulla that impacted Brown? And then there was now change when Porzingis and all those guys come in. So, like, is he saying this is technically the third time he's had to make an adjustment because Tatum's out?
Yeah, I think the Ime system, in a way, might have fit Jalen a little bit better because Jalen's just so big on defense.
Right.
And so is Mazzulla, especially after his first year. And that was the one big thing after Mazzulla's first year. He really honed in on the defensive side of the ball. Like, they wanted to be a top defensive team. Like, that's how they wanted to play. And they've done that to their credit. Like, the scheme has worked. They've been a great defensive team. But Ime obviously has one of the best defensive schemes in the league, one of the mm-hmm. best coaches. I know that's Keith's guy.
He's the best coach.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, great job defensively, like what he does with his team. So, yeah, I mean, there are different kind of changes he's had to make, and, you know, maybe that wears on a player. I also, like, again, it's the tone in this as well. Like, yeah. I don't think it's necessarily complaining per se. It's like, you know, it's been well chronicled what he's been through in Boston, going back from the night he was drafted and the draft night booze, mm-hmm. and that's something he doesn't forget about.
No.
And then for years...
Which, again, is wrong. Like, I get his point, and I also get his point of holding a grudge. Like, I'm very pro holding a grudge. I think it's the most healthy thing you can do. But, no, he... is still pissed about being booed on draft night, but what he doesn't understand, and I'm sure people have told him this a million times, the boos weren't for him.
Right.
Which he doesn't get, and if he needs that for motivation, I guess great, and so be it. But it was literally because that's when Wick came out with the fireworks quote. They're gonna trade for Jimmy Butler or Paul George or whoever else on that list. They didn't even really know who Jaylen Brown was. He played 1 year at Cal. I don't think a lot of people were watching a lot of Cal basketball.
No, not Pac-12.
So, no, and me and Jones were there. We were doing a draft show at the Garden, sick brag, and everybody booed it, but they were booing that. And then he became a great player, and fans love him. People love – he won't accept it, and some people are just this way. But I think the fan base, for the most part, because you can't get any fan base to 100% agree on anything – but I would say the vast majority of fans love Brown. Wouldn't you say so?
I would agree with that. I think maybe he's falling into a majority on Twitter that, you know, it's not a nice place there if you haven't learned.
Yeah,
it's a great place there. Maybe he's reading too much into
but
that.
But, like, it's easy to avoid. But like, you don't have to be on Twitter. If there's hate on Twitter, avoid it. And then how much hate is there then in your real life? That's not real life. This is fake life.
Right, and I think that's part of this offseason that's kind of been therapeutic to him, is having all these, being so active in the community and seeing all these people standing out in the rain or whatever it may be to support him, and these guys, everyone coming up and just telling him how much he means to them in the city. I think that kind of changes his perception. And I think just after the championship in 2024, I think there was a different kind of change in his demeanor. Like, he seemed more confident. It was a weight off their shoulders on the court and just off the court. I feel like he felt more accepted in a way. And, you know, I don't know if he's spoken about this on the record and he hasn't said anything to me about it, but, like, that's just kind of the feeling that I got, that, like, he felt more comfortable after the championship, felt more appreciated.
So they do think it's the people online that are saying these things, the shut up and play basketball people.
Right.
It's such a small number of people, but obviously they use that as a motivation.
Right. I mean, I think he went in there and said, like, people don't like the community stuff that he does.
I mean, who's going to say that?
Like, that's a very small minority.
There's an idiot to say everything, though, right? Like, and if that's what you want to point to, I guess so be it. And maybe everybody is a little bit guilty of that. You know, if 100 people tell you you did a great job, and then one person says you suck, you're more likely to remember the one guy that says you suck than you are the 100 that think you're great. And there are other players, like, look at Kevin Durant. every couple of months, Kevin Durant gets in like a back and forth on Twitter. Like, he can't hit it. Like, dude, you've made $500 million. You're one of the greatest players of all time. But if somebody says, like, you're not clutch, like, you like lose your mind.
Right.
He's shameless now. He just does it on his regular account. Yeah. He used to make, like,
he had burners. He's
been exposed so many times. Like, what do you have to lose? Just go out with the regular account.
But it is weird. I mean, you know, I guess in that case, like, some guys are just never going to be completely happy, because there are some quotes in there talking about he can't be himself in Boston. And it goes back to, like, all right, like, is he going to be here for the long haul? But the answer is, yeah, he already has. Like, the guy's about to enter his 10th year with the Celtics, is under the Supermax deal. Now, not a lot of players start and finish their career in one place, regardless.
Especially now. It's going to be so rare in today's NBA. These max contracts, I mean, teams aren't going to be able to live with two or three guys on a max contract. Right. I mean, you can, but you have to be really good at building the roster lower on. So I think we're going to see that more and more. But I will say, too, it feels like every time Jalen gets the chance to express his love for the city, he does it.
Yeah.
Like, he's very clear that he's happy in Boston. He loves it here. Now, there's some things that he doesn't like, and I think that'd be anywhere. But I feel like, for the most part, he seems happy in the situation. I mean, doesn't love all aspects, and it's not going to be perfect. But for the most part,
Celtic City, I thought, was pretty interesting. Like, the documentary,
right?
When, you know, him and, like, Bill Russell, and just sort of like him talking about that pretty openly. I thought that whole thing was pretty good. But more like on the court, he had a great quote too at the end of this article, where he's just like, "I feel like I'm very talented. I'm one of the most talented people in this league on this planet. I'm looking forward to showing the world more," which. Great, because next season is going to be all about him. Like, you're the guy. Like, you are clearly the guy.
Right, you asked for it. You're going to get it.
Oh, my God. I mean, how many shots per game is he going to be allowed to take next year? Like, 25?
I mean, we went through the numbers a couple weeks ago. We went through the numbers. I mean, with Jason Tatum out, you're missing about a quarter of your shots per game.
Yeah.
A quarter of your points, a quarter of your assists, a quarter of your rebounds. There's so much ground.
And that's just Tatum.
Then you got Kristaps Porzingis, and Drew Holiday didn't shoot as much, but Drew Holiday also factors into that. Al Horford, just think about all the guys you lost. Now, again, it's going to be interesting to see how much they actually push him and how much they let him go, because you don't want to overextend him. I think the Celtics, when you keep saying retool, that's a mini rebuild, right?
It is. You're gearing up
for next year. Like, we're going to see what happens. We're going to play free this year, see what happens. We've seen these teams go on a run before, but it's gearing up for next year. And are you going to overextend Jalen and potentially running the risk of him getting hurt or whatever? I don't know.
No, like, probably not. So last year, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander led the league in shot attempts per game at 21.8.
Is Tatum fifth?
Fourth. 20.4. So four guys averaged 20 or more shots. Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Cade Cunningham, and SGA. Brown's going to smash that.
That's crazy that SGA is that high, considering how many free throws he takes.
Yeah, too. How many real, like, actual shots did he take in the game?
How many actual shots per game is he taking?
Because, like, then he also took 9 free throws a game. Yeah.
That's incredible that he's that high. But, yeah, there's going to be tons of opportunity on this offense.
And yeah.
As much as people are talking about Jaylen Brown as the true one, I'm also excited to see what can Derek White do as a two.
Sure,
what can Peyton Pritchard do as a three? Yep. Like, see what Anthony Simons got. Like, it's going to be fun in that sense to see what they have. Because at this point, it's like, there are no expectations. That's just the reality. Like, Brad Stevens can come out as much as he wants and say, oh, the North Star is contending for a championship. Well, the North Star is miles and miles and miles away at this point. Like, you can't seriously enter the year with the front court that you have and be like, hey, no, don't worry, we're trying to contend. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't with the front court that you have. That's just not reality. So it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a lot of experimenting and finding out what you have on this roster for the future. And I think that's something that fans can be excited about.
And it's corny and it's a cliche, but the most important thing is getting through the season healthy.
Right.
Is what it is.
So, you're going into next year with Tatum, and you're like, all right.
And hopefully some momentum.
All the money that's coming off the books, too. I mean, Simons and Niang, their contracts, if they finish the season here, their contracts will be expiring. You're going to be under the first apron by, I think, $18 million next year. So you'll have all these assets that you didn't have access to. You'll be well under the second apron.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll have plenty of opportunity to mix and match then. So it's unfortunate. And I think the conversation would be a little bit different if Tatum was still healthy. I think the trades that were made in terms of Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday were completely inevitable. Like, that was going to happen. I think maybe had they won the championship, they would have kept it and they would have really dipped back into the second apron, because you had just won back-to-back titles had you done
that
it. And a new owner's going to come in and be like, nah, you know what, we're going to dump these two guys.
Even if you didn't win it, but Tatum was healthy,
They were going to trade him off.
It was going to.
Yeah,
was,
they were going to another second apron.
Maybe you get Horford back, though, because Tatum returing and the East being wide open, he's like, all right, that's at least a place worth.
I completely agree with that because that's when Horford's tune changed. It was kind of right after the Tatum injury, right when they were eliminated.
Mark showed
that's
up.
When it's like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to come back for another year. Like, we'll see. And it seems like he is, and it seems like it's Golden State's the answer. So
interesting.
Maybe if Tatum was healthy, there'd be more of an incentive for guys like Horford and Cornette. I thought Cornette, too. He's turning 30 this summer.
Gotcha.
Hasn't made a ton of money in the NBA.
He got his money
so
now.
So he goes out and gets paid. Like, I think that was inevitable, but you probably would have had Horford,
All right, that's Justin Turpin. He's in for a Pure Hoops Hour on Jones and Keefe. No Jones today. A lot of lists have been coming out, best since 2000, the all-quarter century stuff. Turp and I are going to come up with our all-NBA quarter-century teams. That's right. Two backcourt, three frontcourt for a first, second, and third team. Stats from the 2000 season on. None of the 90s stuff. Doesn't count if they were good in the 90s. So we will give you those lists coming up next. But right now here is Billy Lanning with What's Trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending is brought to you by Northeastern Savings Bank. The National League defeated the American League 7-6 after the first ever extra innings home run swing-off. Philadelphia Phillies outfielder Kyle Schwarber was named All-Star MVP after hitting three home runs in the swing-off. This is the NL's second All-Star win in the last 3 years. Sox closer Aroldis Chapman pitched in the bottom of the ninth. Chapman gave up no hits and struck out one. The Red Sox will return to action on Friday night. The Sox will be in Chicago taking on the Cubs in a three-game series. Last night at a sold-out TD Garden, the Indiana Fever defeated the Connecticut Sun 85-77. Caitlin Clark scored 14 points for the Fever before exiting the game late in the fourth quarter with a groin injury. Clark has missed 5 games earlier in the season with another groin injury. And tonight, the New England Revolution will be in New York taking on the Red Bulls. Kickoff is at 7:30. Northeastern Savings Bank is the leading alternative to using a big bank for businesses and families in Massachusetts. Upgrade to a local partner. Upgrade to Northeastern Savings Bank. Member FDIC and DIF. I'm Billy Lanning. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
WEEI.
WEEI. New England Sports Original.
Pure Hoops rolling on here. Jones and Keefe, WEEI Jones off this the rest of the week. So we have Billy Lanney has slid over. Nick is still here. And Terp talking some hoops. We're talking about the Jaylen Brown article. If you guys want to weigh in on that, you can at 617-779-7937. I love a list. I love a power ranking. You name it. The all-NBA quarter-century teams. I've not seen anybody do this yet. I'm not saying it's an original idea. I'm just saying I haven't seen anything. I think we're getting out in front.
I think so, too.
Right?
I'd call this an original idea.
Because they did ESPN a couple of weeks ago, and me and Jones went over it. They did the all-quarter-century football team.
Yeah.
Right? They did, like, a 53-man roster. So we're doing, like, all-NBA teams. So first, second, third. We're going old rules, where it has to be two backcourt, three frontcourt.
They should bring that back.
Not just a five. Like, positionless is stupid.
Bring it back.
I get not wanting to like shoehorn in a center every time because there's not like maybe as many good centers and you want like an add another forward. But anyway, we're going to do it because it's our rules. Two guards, three forwards. You want to start with the first team?
Yeah,
so we can build the anticipation because I think the first team might be a little bit more obvious, although maybe not obvious.
This might be unanimous.
It might be. So we're going since 2000, meaning that season, obviously. So if the guy was really, really good in 98, 99, then good for him, but it doesn't really
count.
Help their cause here. There's a couple very, very obvious. I did go back and forth on one, so I'm curious who your top five are.
All right, LeBron James.
LeBron James.
Oh, my God.
Cavs LeBron. Miami LeBron.
LeBron no, I'm just kidding. James.
Laker LeBron.
LeBron James.
Yep.
Steph Curry.
Yep.
Kobe Bryant. Tim Duncan. Shaq.
So you know what?
It's the exact same list.
No.
No.
That was my original list.
Oh.
He swapped it out.
Jokic?
Jokic over Shaq.
I went back and forth on that one, too.
So this one, again, and the reason why I even specifically said 90 stats don't count is because Shaquille O'Neal had a run of all-NBA teams. He brought the Magic to a finals, all of that. Even his early Laker days, dominant in the 90s.
Right.
So he did win the titles. So he won way more titles than Jokic did. But Jokic has won three MVPs and finished runner-up two other years.
And he probably got robbed of at least one of them.
I think he should have won all of them.
Yeah, he probably he definitely should have won the Embiid year.
I think he also had a case this year.
He was the first center to ever average a triple-double.
This was his best year, and he didn't win. He scored more points than he's ever scored. He grabbed more rebounds, I think, than he's ever grabbed. He had more assists than he's ever grabbed. This was his best year,
yeah.
And they gave it to SGA. He also had two other All-NBA seasons, but not even talking about the five in a row. So I my first thought was, yeah, Shaq, obviously Shaq. And then when I was like comparing the two, I ended up going with Jokic. I don't think there's really a wrong answer here. Do you want to break the tie?
No, I don't think there is either. And I would only go with Shaq in this situation because how Shaq changed that position.
Yeah.
You know, players, teams had to adjust how they did things because of his size and his abilities and stuff like that. So the impact on the position, I think Shaq is over him. But, you know, the numbers are in your favor for
him. He does have four titles, and Jokic has one. So like, if you want to use that as a tiebreaker, I mean, Shaq has four since 2000, three in a row with the Lakers, then one later on with the Heat. Curry, Kobe, LeBron, Duncan, got to be on everybody's list, though. Those four have to be unanimous. Kobe had some time prior to 2000s, but he didn't really hit his stride until the 2000s. And all those other guys, Duncan had the 99 title, but even still, he had a bunch of other titles since 2000.
So somebody would argue Garnett over Duncan, though?
I don't think you can.
I mean, you don't think there's any argument for it.
I think there was
championships aside.
I think there was a season or two that you could.
Yep.
But I think totality. Gotcha. I mean, Duncan's pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't argue Duncan, of course not. But just you think of Garnett and what he did. And
Garnett was insane. Duncan's won five total titles, four post 2000, was a 2-time league MVP, a 3-times final MVP. 15 times All-NBA.
Duncan had him beat in points per game, rebounds per game, blocks per game, has more championships, more first-team All-NBA, more All-NBA period, more all-defensive teams, more MVPs, finals
it's
MVPs.
Bananas.
It's
and
nuts.
They're tied for All-Stars, but for the most part, he hasn't beat
And they'll call him the most boring person.
I was going to say, Garnett, better personality by far, leaps and bounds. But no,
but when it comes up to showing up and working, nobody tops Tim
Duncan. Duncan's probably top 10 all-time player.
I mean, if
I don't
was,
think people don't like putting him in there, but it's like it's his stats and his consistency, his longevity.
You think part of that is his personality, kind of 100%. Similar to Tatum?
Yes.
Like
definitely.
If Duncan was like Kevin Garnett, like screaming and yelling, like I think he'd be
Look at
differently.
The guys that he gets sort of like lumped in with from this era that you like either have him like 8th all time or like 12th all time are like Kobe, Shaq, and like Garnett. Like those guys are all like huge personalities. And the Spurs, and it's like the Spurs. It's not like the Lakers. They were never a cool
team.
They
were so good, though.
It was always like,
the Spurs teams were so good.
Oh, they were. All right, so we have 4 out of 5 unanimous on the first team. What do you got for the second team?
Steve Nash, 2 MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
James Harden, only player in NBA history with 3 scoring titles and 2 assist titles.
How about that?
So I like James Harden there. Kevin Durant, Giannis, and Jokic.
Okay, so we have not as much overlap here. My backcourt is Allen Iverson and Dwayne Wade.
Nice.
So Iverson got an MVP in there. I think it was the 2001 season.
Yep.
Made a finals appearance, scoring titles, a ton of all NBAs. He was good in the 90s too, but he had some of his best years in the 2000s. Dwayne Wade, I think, obviously as a Celtics fan, was not like a huge fan of his by any means, but you could make the case since Jordan, only Kobe's a better two guard. Like he might be the best two guard besides Kobe.
I think he's overlooked a little bit because of the talent when they had LeBron and Bosch. But people forget that he won a title.
He was the best player on that team.
Shaq was still good.
But Dwayne Wade was the best player.
And he won finals MVP that year.
Correct.
And he had an all-time bad statue.
Yeah,
that is a great point, Nick.
That is brutal. That's
tough statue.
Didn't they take it down and like redo it?
I think they might have.
They need to.
Statues are not easy to make it. Exactly right. As somebody that was in the Pro Football Hall of Fame recently, Bragg, a lot of those busts.
And you can't take your eyes off.
Sick.
Nice throw.
That was actually a great misclick.
So I'm going AI and D-Wade, although your two guys I like, and you know, I might mention them in a minute. I'm going Giannis on the second team. I'm going Shaquille O'Neal, because I didn't have him on the first team. I put him on the second team. And I'm going Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk was, I swear, he was one of the players that there was a stretch of games I feel like I never saw him miss. I would like, I'd like pop it on like TNT. You're like, oh, Dirk, hit everything.
That knee up fall away, he never missed a shot using
now
that.
Now that's a hell of a statue. Right out front of the American Airlines Center, they have him doing the knee up fadeaway.
That's pretty
it
cool.
It is a sick statue.
But does his face look like him?
Yeah, it's actually not bad.
Yeah, it does.
And it's pretty big.
Yeah,
it's a nice statue.
And
it's not the sad little Iverson statue that Philly gave him.
No, it's not that. Yeah, you can just like pick it up and bring with you. Right. But yeah, MVP. He beat LeBron James in an NBA Finals. So Dirk Nowitzki for me was insane. All those All NBA teams. So I got him on my second team.
I was going back and forth between Dirk and Kevin Durant as to where to go there, but I think the accolades went towards Durant. Mm-hmm. So third team here. I have D-Wade on the third team. Then I have Jason Kidd. Now, this was a tough one.
Really?
We'll see where you go next. But
interesting.
Jason Kidd, Kawhi Leonard, obviously Dirk, like I mentioned, and then Kevin Garnett.
Okay. Interesting. I did not go Kidd, but I went with the guys, actually, believe it or not. So we didn't look at each other's list ahead of time. So this is a surprise in real time. Your backcourt from the second team is my third team, Steve Nash, James Harden. James Harden, I went back and forth on because – he's a tough guy to figure out. He's had a lot of really bad playoff appearances, and obviously he's never won a title, but he is an MVP. He has some insane stats. Even this year, you thought he's done. He's back on an All-NBA team this year. So I give James Harden that spot. I can't stand Kevin Durant, but I can't ignore all what he's done. So I got Durant on there with Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Garnett.
So we had the same there at the end.
We have a lot of overlap. So Jason Kidd, why Jason Kidd?
So I was actually going back and forth with him and Chris Paul. But when I'm looking at those two, it's like Jason Kidd led those Nets teams to two NBA Finals. Obviously won one with the Mavericks, and Chris Paul has only been to one, and they got destroyed.
So I think Chris Paul is the most overrated player maybe in league history. He like because if you just look at his All-NBAs and like All-Stars, you're like, oh, he's one of like the 15 best players
defensive
ever.
Too. He has a bunch of defensive teams, yeah.
I can't stand him. I don't think you can win with him. He was on all those Clippers teams.
How did none of those teams make the finals?
Didn't make
how?
The conference
finals. How did none of those teams make the conference finals?
Him, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan were all NBA at the same time. And, well, they had Doc Rivers, so that held them back.
Yeah, definitely.
And then they'd lose in the second round every year. And they'd
get my larynx.
Yeah, they'd have like a big lead and they would lose.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
So two guys, Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook.
That was another one I was
are two guys that have some pretty amazing accolades, but I was like, I can't put them.
Maybe that's recency bias with Russ. It's like, this guy is a roller coaster. Like, but back in the day, he was.
Admittedly, two of my toughest omissions actually were Paul Pierce and Jason Tatum. Tatum has a legit case to actually be on here. I think another year or two, because he has, what, five straight first-team All-NBA? No,
five.
Four straight?
No, five straight All-NBA, four straight first-team.
And a title, like he is right there. I think you could make it if he's on someone's list. I don't think that's a homer take. I think if he's on your third team for the quarter century, that's fair.
I totally agree. I would have Pierce over him still, though.
Oh, really?
I would still have Pierce over Tatum as of right now. Yeah, I think eventually Tatum will pass him.
So
as it stands right now,
I love Pierce. I just feel like Tatum has more All NBAs. They each have one title. Pierce does have the Finals MVP, but I mean Tatum had a great playoff run. And they each have two finals appearances on their belts. Paul Pierce, as much as I love the guy, was never first team All-NBA, not even once. So I think Tatum a little bit better, but both of them just miss.
And the fact that you're having this conversation about Jason Tatum,
yeah,
who's 27 years old, yeah, is that says a lot about where he's at, and what he's accomplished as a player. And man, you really hope this doesn't derail his career, this Achilles injury, because it just puts it in perspective of how good this guy is. I think night in and night out, it might be taken for granted a little bit, because it's just, you've grown so used to it. We've been seeing it for 8 or 9 years now, just how night in and night out, how dominant this guy is. I think people kind of lose it. Sometimes it'd be like, oh, it's just Jason Tatum doing Jason Tatum things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's really, when you have these types of conversations and you just see how close he is to these names already at 27.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's special.
None of you guys had Kawhi Leonard?
I did. Yeah.
13.
I threw him, in quick. He's a good one.
I had first and second team in mind. I'm like, I don't think they managed Kawhi Leonard. I'm like, okay, he didn't get missed.
No, he's legitimate.
Dwight Howard.
So Dwight Howard had a good run. I didn't put him on there. I think there was enough front court guys, but he'd be in the mix. Did you consider Joel Embiid at all?
I didn't.
He's
Tracy McGrady was another one that
I
wanted to put
out
there. Vince Carter was another one.
Vince was good.
Was, you know, tough to leave off. But it's tough. You only get 15 spots.
Only 15 spots. Who else? I think we did all the MVPs, at least mentioned them. They're not all on our list. I mean, Derrick Rose, but then all the injuries. SGA, I mean, he's got to do a few more years. I mean, his stats for this season were incredible, or his accolades for this season were really as good as you could get. But no, that's pretty good. You know, Ray Allen didn't really consider him. He had a good run, has some good stuff in there.
And today's NBA, man, he'd be like the scoring champ. He'd be the guy. He'd be jacking up.
He'd be the guy. All right, so Terp will make a graphic, and you guys can let us know at Jones and Keefe on Twitter and on Instagram. We'll post that. First, second, and third team since 2000 in the NBA. Two backcourt, three frontcourt is the rule. That's what we're doing. If you have any thoughts or questions about the Celtics, Terp's going to stick around a little bit longer. 617-779-7937. The latest on Al Horford, Damian Lillard, and that hothead Jordan Walsh getting thrown out of a summer league game. We'll get to all that coming up next here on WEEI.
The Red Sox Station. WEEI. WEEI. New England Sports Original.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
You're listening to Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
Back here at Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Still some more pure hoops here with Justin Turpin. Covers the C's for WEEI.com. We always have to explain this. And maybe some of this is just trolling or just messing around. Every time we do a list since 2000, you always get the people that miss that part. So Terp and I just did our all-NBA teams. No. We've gotten Magic Johnson and John Stockton texts.
We got one about Curry, too. Who was on it?
Curry was on it.
Both of us had him on the first team.
We're going to post these. Don't you worry. They're going to be on at Jones and Keefe on Twitter and on Instagram, our all-NBA teams since 2000. You'd mentioned earlier, though, in the show, Al Horford, you feel like all but done deal to the Warriors?
Yeah, it seems that way. And again, when Jason Tatum went down, that's kind of where his tune changed, and that's when he opened up the idea of possibly finishing his career elsewhere. And at this point, it just makes the most sense. As much as it probably sucks for Celtics fans to see him go again, it's just it doesn't make sense. Like the next time that Jason Tatum, assuming he misses all of next year, the next time that Jason Tatum's on the floor with Al Horford, Al will be 40. And Al Horford can still contribute, man. He was arguably the Celtics' best defender last year in the postseason, and there's metrics to back that up. And he did it against all five positions. Like, he's one of the rare breeds right now, even at 39 now. He's one of those rare breeds that can still guard 1 through 5 as a big. Like, you can't really find that. Mm. And he can also stretch the floor. He can shoot threes. Like, there's going to be a market for him, obviously. That's why the Warriors are throwing money at him. And I'm just wondering how much the Jonathan Kuminga decision is kind of factoring into that.
Yeah, so you get a little bit more money. Yeah.
It's essentially at the worst kept secret in basketball, it seems, right now, that Al Horford will be a Warrior. Steph Curry had a little bit of a slip up the other day when he was talking about Al. He was like, if it happens.
Nice.
Like,
all right. So that's
kind of let the cat out of the bag there. Yeah.
It's a good spot for him.
It's a great spot for him.
Yeah.
It's a great. And I think out of the rumored options, like obviously the Lakers were up there and it felt like they were gone once they signed DeAndre Ayton. Nobody wanted to see Al Horford go to the Lakers. Yeah. Denver, I think, would have been a good fit as well, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be the ones to land him. I think Golden State's a good opportunity. And that team, you pair that defensive front court. I know we're talking a lot about the Celtics front court and how weak they are. That front court of Draymond Green and Al Horford defensively, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then you have Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry. I thought last year the Warriors could have made some noise in the postseason. They were terrific right after they got Jimmy Butler.
Right.
Obviously, Curry got hurt in the playoffs, and that was that. But like that team could make some noise, and it's a bunch of guys that have played in big games. Mm-hmm. Curry, Butler, Al, Green, all these guys have played in big moments, big games. So I think that's going to go a long way. So good for Horford. Get one more payday, get another chance to kind of chase it. And I'm sure the Celtics, you know, Jason Tatum, maybe not as much Jaylen Brown, like as much as he wants to kind of compete this year. I think for the most part, though, they understand it. Like, go out and try to get your money, go out and try to win one more. And it just didn't align with the timeline anymore.
Yeah. It's going to be tough for Brad because Brad Stevens clearly loves Al Horford. He brought him back the second he took over that job. And now he's like,
and there's no
money restraints. He can't really offer him a ton. Plus, you can't offer him a realistic shot at another title.
There's no ill will, I don't think.
No.
Al at all. I think everyone kind of understands the situation the Celtics find themselves in, and they can't afford Al Horford. And right now, if you're going to be retooling for a year, you know what Al Horford can do. And by the time, again, when he shares the court with Tatum again, is he going to be the same Al Horford? Like, you don't know. You have to take flyers at this point, and that's why they brought in guys like Josh Minot and Luka Garza, guys that can potentially contribute down the road. So, yeah, it makes total sense.
You think he signs for multiple years with the Warriors? Or do you think it's kind of like a one-year
deal?
I would imagine it's a one-year deal,
and we'll play it by year, see what happens with them. I think that's kind of what it would be. Probably the mid-level, right around probably like $5 to $8 million, just somewhere in there, have them come in, championship experience to a team already ripe with it, a guy that can still contribute. So, I think it'll probably be a one-year deal, and they'll play it by year.
What do you think ultimately happens with Damian Lillard? Obviously, the report came out the other day that, you know, Jason Tatum's even recruiting him here, even though both might not play at all next season. Yeah. Getting up there, I mean, mid-30s, coming off the injury that he's coming off of, where do you think he ends up?
Well, I think where there's smoke, there's fire. Okay. I think this does make a lot of sense for Damian Lillard and the Celtics. He's not going to be asked to be the Damian Lillard he was in the past. Like, even with Milwaukee, he averaged 24 points a game. Like, he's still
an elite scorer. Oh, he can't help but score. The guy's,
a great three-point shooter. Yep. Now, I do worry a little bit because his game centers a lot on his explosiveness and his athleticism and, you know, that could sometimes take a hit once you have an Achilles injury, a major injury like that. And he's also getting up there in age. But I think if he wants to have a chance to compete, what does Damian Lillard have to accomplish still in his basketball career right now?
A title.
If he wants a chance to do that with the team like Jason Tatum and him played together in the Olympics, there seems to be a bond there. Clearly, if Jason Tatum's recruiting him, if you want a chance to get a title, the Celtics are going to, as soon as Jason Tatum steps back and he's healthy, the Celtics are going to go right back into win now mode, because you have to take advantage of the time that you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on the team together. You just have to do that. So they're going to be spending right away. That's the expectation. That's kind of what ownership and what Brad Stevens and Mike Zarin are making it sound like. As soon as he's back, we're going to go right back into this thing. And they're going to be contenders. As long as you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on the floor together, you are a contender. So there should be some drag to that for Damian Lillard.
I just don't know. I mean, because he's one of my favorite players to watch. Like, I've loved Damian Lillard since the second he came into the league. And for everybody that thought he was washed, he was top 10 in the NBA in both points and assists last year.
Right.
Like, so he's still, now he's coming off this massive injury, so who knows if he's going to be as productive going forward. I just think if they keep the roster somewhat similar and you have Derek White and you have Peyton Pritchard, and now you're like, oh, and we also have Damian Lillard, like, if you're five best players are all 6'6 and under.
Right.
Like, if there was a big man equivalent of Lillard, right? You know, a guy that's older, like a, I don't know, like an Anthony Davis or somebody like that, who's like older, been hurt, coming off an injury, and you're like, we could take a chance on him. It would make more sense for the team than bringing in Lillard.
I think that's where the money factors in, though.
Yeah.
Because if you're giving him a mid-level, right around $5 million, you can still go out and spend next season on a big man and really shore up your front court. And again, it just, like, I think with what they have right now, he's not going to be asked to be the old Damian Lillard. Like, it's going to actually create opportunity for him in a way. I think I do worry a little bit about the defense, though. And the Celtics have been just so lucky with the fact that nobody on their roster has been a defensive liability over the last two seasons. I think Peyton Pritchard, maybe Sam Hauser, maybe, but like, those guys are always going to have their limitations because of size or whatever it may be. As soon as you're going to have defensive liabilities on the floor now, and like, people are going to have to kind of come to grips with that. So I think there is some makings for Damian Lillard to come here. It makes a lot of sense.
Would he want to be the sixth man?
At this point, I think he just wants to win.
Yeah.
Like, you really can't, that beggars can't be choosers at this point. I don't think a team's going to, at this point, he'll probably never be a number one again. Like,
right.
That's just the reality. Yeah,
so that's one thing for him to hear that, but for, like, as the player, would he be able to accept that role?
I think so.
You know what I mean?
So. Like, the way the Celtics play, I think he definitely could. And I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. And if he wants to sign before, I think if you're the Celtics, you might wait until next year. So just because of the cap situation you find yourself in now, which is, again, there's still less than $500,000 over the second apron, it's like $300,000 or whatever. Like, they can easily maneuver under that, but you're going to need a big. You don't want to be paying Damian Lillard to rehab when you don't have literally anyone in your front court.
Last thing, anything jump out or worthwhile from Summer League so far?
Yeah, I think Charles Bassey's the one to look at because he's come off the street and has given you an opportunity to sign somebody as a big man. Like, we've been talking about over the last hour here. Like, you know, he can take a minimum and you'd still be under the second apron. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's a reason he's available, right? You see some kind of gaps and whatever that he has when he's on the floor. Obviously, there's been an injury history as well. But this is a guy that, you know, kind of fell on your lap. He tried out worked out with the Celtics, decided to play with the team. And now he's been probably your best player in Summer League this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's some interest there. I'd be shocked if he doesn't at least get an invite to camp. But you got to act quick, because I think teams are going to be interested in him. There's always going to be interest in any kind of big man that can come in and contribute. I also like what I've seen from Hugo Gonzalez as well. I just like the confidence he plays.
Yeah, I saw some of the highlights you put out there.
I mean, guys, first team like a maniac. His debut was terrific. He's running around. It's everything as advertised, defensively. Yeah. Offensively, he's not afraid to shoot the ball. I know his splits and his percentages aren't great shooting the ball, but he's not afraid to jack him up, and that's how you stay on the floor with the Celtics. Just shoot the ball. Just shoot it.
That's what Joe wants.
You could work on that. You could work. Like, the Celtics have had plenty of guys that have just figured out their shots over the years. Look at Derek White.
Oh, they got a ton of guys that weren't shooters.
He was
not a shooter. Jaylen Brown wasn't a shooter. Even Tatum really wasn't a shooter.
Al Horford. Yeah. Like, granted, that was a big process over the course of his career,
right.
But they made him into a respectable shooter. Like, they can kind of transform this kid. And I think everything's been advertised with the motor he plays with, the defense that he has. Like, he's going to be fun to watch. I think you need to have this guy in the rotation this year because he could contribute.
All right, very good. That's Pure Hoops. Full hour of Pure Hoops. At Justin M. Turpin on Twitter. Turp covers the Seas, of course, for WEEI.com, and he joins us throughout the season as well. Thank you, Turp.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And check out our all-NBA quarter-century teams. Again, since 2000, it's a critical part of that. You're not going to find Jordan or Magic or Bird.
Somebody
said
Bill Russell.
Russell I would have on my all-time list. Yeah. I would. Spoiler on that. That could be another day in the summer. But these are since 2000 at Jones and Keefe on both Twitter and Instagram. All right, we have one more hour of the program, including Grab Bag. And Bill Belichick responded to Robert Kraft's comments about the best thing Kraft ever did was taking a chance on Bill. Bill responded to that. So we'll have that coming up next year on WEEI.
Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
WEEI.
WEEI.